Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. First, let's look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. Debt settlers offer promises but little help, according to the New York Times. Tina Carter, burdened with $25,000 in credit card debt, did not want to be a deadbeat. After looking for help on the internet, Mrs. Carter, a West Virginia homemaker, wound up in the hands of a sweet-talking credit specialist from Texas. He claimed his company, Credit Solutions of America, could set her on the road to a debt-free life. But what really happened, Mrs. Carter says, is that Credit Solutions pocketed nearly $4,000 of the couple's income, a little bit each month. Now they are in a deeper hole than ever. It is a pervasive problem these days. With the economy on the ropes, hundreds of thousands of consumers are turning to debt settlement companies like Credit Solutions to escape a crushing pile of bills. As many as 2,000 settlement companies operate in the United States, triple the number of a few years ago. Settlement ads offer financial salvation blanket on radio and late-night television. Consumers who turn to these companies sometimes get help from them, personal finance experts say, but that is not the typical experience. More often, they say a settlement company collects a large fee, often 15% of the total debt, and accomplishes little or nothing on the consumer's behalf. State attorneys general are being flooded with complaints about settlement companies and other forms of debt relief. In North Carolina, complaints doubled last year, while in Florida they tripled, spokeswoman for the state attorneys general said. In Oregon, complaints have quadrupled since 2006. The rapid rise of debt settlement is the result of two colliding forces. Americans owe more on their credit cards than ever, a result of the spending binge of the last decade. But, as the recession deepens, their ability to pay is declining. Carlton Ginsburg, a consulting firm, estimated that the amount of consumer credit at risk of default increased in February by $5 billion to $24.5 billion. High credit card rates and fees have been a point of contention for consumer advocates. On the NBC program Meet the Press last week, the administration's chief economic advisor, Lawrence H. Summers, said President Obama planned to crack down on abusive credit card lending that forces Americans to pay excessive interest rates. For many consumers, their only hope for solvency is to get their balances down to a manageable level. But the card companies, concerned for their own solvency, are not inclined to let them off the hook. Debt settlement companies claim they help both creditor and consumer by bridging the abyss between them. Quote, there is an overwhelming demand for this service, according to Robbie H. Birnbaum, a lawyer who is a board member of the Association of Settlement Companies, a trade group. He said people want to avoid bankruptcy, and this is their last resort. In practice, however, the debt settlement firms frequently manage to please no one. An executive of the American Bankers Association, representing the credit card industry at a recent forum, labeled debt settlement companies, quote, very harmful to both consumer and creditor. Even debt collectors are upset, saying that settlement companies prevent them from collecting. The premise of debt settlement is simple. A consumer stops trying to pay even the minimum on his credit cards. Instead, he accumulates money in an account that the settlement company promises to use to strike a bargain with the creditors. Confronted with the certainty of some money now versus the possibility of no money later, the card company settles for 40 cents on the dollar or less. Even if the goal makes sense, achieving it can be difficult. Once the consumer stops paying the minimums, the card companies increase efforts to collect. Their fees and interest charges do not stop. They may sue. The consumer's credit score falls through the floor. Long before any attempt at a deal with the creditors, the settlement companies take a fee. Credit Solutions, for example, deducted $233 from the Carter's checking account for 3 months, and then $116 a month for the next 27 months, a total of about $3,800 by early this year. It was a fee Mrs. Carter and her husband, Willard Carter, a miner who retired after he was injured, could ill afford, especially since, by their account, the company put little effort into their case. "After they got their money, they ran," said Mrs. Carter, 51. The Carters went to the West Virginia Attorney General's office in January, joining a flood of that state's citizens complaining about debt relief schemes. "We're being overwhelmed," an assistant attorney general, Norman Google, said. Since 2005, Mr. Google and his colleagues have successfully pursued cases against 14 companies promoting debt relief and debt settlement, resulting in refunds to 3,443 consumers, and they are pursuing more. And yet, he said, the complaints keep coming. On March 26, Credit Solutions was sued by the state of Texas, which accused it of engaging in false, deceptive, and misleading acts and practices. The suit says the company misrepresents its success rate, noting that the company's own data show that over 80% of the debts enrolled in the program do not settle. Those debts that are settled, the suit says, are for higher amounts than the promised 40 cents on the dollar. Credit Solutions said it would not comment on pending litigation. The settlement companies are the latest response to the old question, how can debt-ridden people avoid bankruptcy? The first answer was nonprofit credit counseling, which began in the 1960s. The counselors, financed by the credit card industry, helped consumers formulate debt management plans and negotiate lower interest rates. Counseling lost some of its appeal after creditors largely stopped offering the concessions needed to get people solvent again. The National Foundation for Credit Counseling, an umbrella group for legitimate counseling services, announced last week that the country's top 10 credit card issuers had agreed to make changes to provide additional relief. The diminishing effectiveness of nonprofit efforts created an opening for commercial settlement companies. Debt settlement is not regulated by federal law, as debt collection is, though general fraud and deceptive marketing laws may apply. The Federal Trade Commission has successfully pursued 7 cases against debt settlement companies since 2001, but one of the agency's commissioners, J. Thomas Rosch, said that such cases take time and staff. "I favor self-regulation that is not a fig leaf," Mr. Rosch said. After inquiries from the New York Times, Credit Solutions sent a full refund to the West Virginia couple, the Carters, saying it was committed to customer satisfaction. The company blamed communications problems for troubles with the Carters' account. The Carters need every penny of their refund. They now owe much more than when they enrolled with Credit Solutions 3 years ago. For instance, interest and fees have increased the balance on one of their cards to $18,000 from $8,000. "I was trying to do the right thing," said Mrs. Carter, "but it didn't work that way." So that was an article in the New York Times, "Debt Settlers Offer Promises But Little Help." If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And in the second segment of the show, I'll be talking about buying a house or refinancing a house, as I've been doing the last few weeks, I would like to again start with that important credit because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, and I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. Also, I recommend that if you have the time, get into the archives at www.kruufm.com and go into the life and debt section so you can get a full education from all of the shows that have been playing on debt-related topics over the last year. In the last few weeks, we've been talking about really what is, practically speaking, the big buy of your life, purchasing the home. And in that situation, you want to purchase, of course, the home that is right for you. It's not just about buying houses, it's about buying a home. And there were a number of rules that we had looked at about buying a home, which we look at as basic, essential, important rules. The rule number one was pay off your past debt before you buy a home, so your unsecured debt, it was really important. We've discussed that at length in the past. Don't buy your home until you have at least 10 to 20% as a down payment. That was the second rule that we had looked at. Very important that you're buying it and getting some equity right from the beginning. The rule number three was buy a home you can afford, and that really meant going into all of the other lessons that we taught in this course about the total amount of income that you have each month, the net amount of income, and then from that net amount of income, how much you can allocate to your bare necessities, which frankly, your home is part of your bare necessities. And it's an important thing to do that calculation before you say, oh, I can afford this home, because you will be actually pushed very hard into getting a home that is more costly than you truly can afford. So you have to go through that process. And last week we discussed the fourth rule, which is getting the cheapest mortgage. And of course, this is really one of the most important issues that you're going to have to deal with in getting a home, because this is where you're going to be able to save the most money immediately and in the long run if you get a mortgage that is the best overall deal for you. As I mentioned last week, it is a statistical fact that half of all the people who sign up for high-priced mortgages could have gotten a low-priced mortgage if they had only shopped harder. So shopping hard in the area of mortgage procurement is essential. And the rule of thumb that we use is that you should get at least 5 quotes before you decide on procuring a mortgage. You need to shop aggressively and pick the very best deal. There is really too much money at stake to stop short on this one or to feel fatigued by the effort. You have to do this completely. And you have to take your time. This is one place where a little bargain hunting can save you tens of thousands of dollars over the life of that loan. And a quick recap of a list of questions to ask in the mortgage process is the following. We went over this last week, and you should go back and listen to that show. But the basic questions are, what is the interest rate? Extraordinarily important. And to get a clear comparative picture among the different loans that you are looking at, how many points are on the loan? And that's really an attempt by the broker and the lender to get some money from you. If it's more than 1 or 2 points, you're paying way too much. How long is the payoff period? You don't want it to be more than 30 years, and you want it to be the same as the number of years that you have on a refinancing situation. In other words, if you only owe 15 years on your mortgage, you don't want to take a 30-year loan against that kind of mortgage, because you will be paying a heck of a lot more from the original obligation that you had for the mortgage. Another question, is this a fixed or variable rate mortgage? Once again, in my experience particularly, it is really a rare situation that you should be getting an adjustable rate mortgage. A fixed rate mortgage is a little bit higher generally in terms of the interest rate, but over the long run, it is much, much less risky, and you do not really pay more when you see what happens in the adjustable rate scenarios. And if you have to go adjustable rate, never get an adjustable rate mortgage that adjusts in less than 5 years. The next question you should ask, is there a balloon payment? If the answer is yes, you don't want balloon payments. They're very, very risky, and it will cost you thousands and thousands of dollars more to deal with that kind of loan. Is there a prepayment penalty? Another question. If the answer is yes, then you should not take that loan, because if you want to move or pay it off more quickly, then you have to pay more money. Not right and not fair. Is there a yield spread premium, a YSP, which is industry speak for kickbacks for the brokers? If the answer is yes, then that is a bad deal for you. And then finally, do you have to take out private mortgage insurance, a PMI? That happens when you're paying less than 20% down payment. As we said, it's better to have the 20% down payment, but if for some reason you didn't, keep shopping around until you find a lender that would not require you to have a PMI for less than 20% down payment. And of course, there are situations where you have to take it, but if it is a single premium PMI, basically you're paying it all up front, then definitely do not take that kind of mortgage option. And then a few other points that I had raised last week is, when you go to do a mortgage, arm yourself before you call. So you have to personally clean up your credit report, get that information, you gather your financial information. When you're going to shop for a mortgage, you gather your pay stubs, your tax returns and bank statements, etc. Another thing is that you find out your current mortgage balance if you are refinancing, and learn how much your house is worth. And those are all important pieces of data when you are going to shop for a mortgage or a mortgage refinancing. As I've stated, you should get multiple quotes. 5 is really a minimal number when you're going to buy a mortgage. Another point is that don't forget that the mortgage broker does not work for you, that he works or she works for the mortgage company or him or herself, and a lot of money gets siphoned off through that process. There are some very reputable mortgage brokers, and you just have to be careful in picking that kind of modus operandi if you are getting a mortgage. Another important recap point is, do not increase the amount of money you borrow. If you are taking out a refinancing loan, in other words, they may want to give you extra cash from your equity. Not a wise idea, and not generally a happy outcome. And the last point I mentioned was that if you are over 60 or are African American or Latino, it actually unfortunately means you have to shop even harder. It's a tough reality. Nobody wants to talk about it, but these three groups are targeted for high-priced mortgages. And even though it isn't fair, it isn't right, and most of the time it isn't even legal, the fact is you need to protect yourself and your family and make sure that you are shopping around and get all the facts and details before you take a mortgage, and one that is going to be the lowest priced contract for you. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So last week, as I said, we talked about the cheapest mortgage procurement, getting the cheapest mortgage, and we went over all the issues with that. This week, I'd like to talk a little bit about another rule. Rule number 5 is, buy a home that makes you happy, a home that makes you smile. And looking at the entire issue of having a home. As I said, it's not just a house. It is a place that is going to have an impact on your entire life, not just your financial life. And it should be a place that reduces stress for you. It gives you a resting zone. It gives your family and friends a place to come together and enjoy. Professor Warren and I both agree that this is really the most important rule when buying a house. You've signed on the dotted line, and it is not just a contract signing. It is a signing of a contract that will bring you a home that makes you smile, makes you happy, makes you glad to wake up every morning, makes you delighted to come home, and it brings you a really full sense of fulfillment in your life. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a mansion or the next level of possibilities down the road. It's where you are right now, but it's bringing you a wonderful sense of satisfaction. You have to be really honest about this. It should not make you feel down or depressed or unhappy to be there. Just the opposite. And of course, it depends on your values. People have completely different values about what is the characteristics and beauty of a home. Small windows for another person may be just the opposite of your values. You may want big windows with lots of light. They may not like wood paneling and you may like it. Or it may have shag rugs and they think it's wonderful, but you think it is not. So those are the kinds of issues you have to think about, because it's going to have an impact on your psychology as a person living in that space. Not everyone likes the same things in a house, and you never want to feel lousy in the place where you live because of the place itself. A home isn't just an investment for your money, and you have to think about that. A home can be an expression of who you are, the cozy kind of place, or the formal kind of place, or a hip bachelor pad. Whatever it is that makes you tick is important, and this will be an expression of it. A house may be a good place to start a marriage, to raise children, to grow old in, but it has to fit you. It has to fit you like a shoe fits you. It can't be something that you contort your psychology to fit into. Just like you can't squeeze your foot into a shoe that's too small or be comfortable in a shoe that is too big. Your home will frankly affect you every single day of your life. So use your head and your heart when you're looking at a home. As a final point in that analysis, you really need to conclude that this is where you live. This is the place that is going to make the most out of your life at this time in your life. And in conclusion, it makes you happy and brings a smile. Now, with all that information that we've had in the few shows and today, you are ready to get that house. The next issue that comes up is the buts from the environment around you. One of the big issues historically has been the housing appreciation issue. Housing appreciation really has become a beloved American story. Somebody buys a house for $200,000 and over time it's worth over $1 million. It's a great hope and belief, although now with the current economy we're seeing that house values have bottomed out and are depreciating greatly, very rapidly. But it has become a generalized myth in America that the house will increase in value over time. You will hear from many people, such as real estate agents, mortgage brokers, and bankers, who all make big bucks when they sell the mortgages, that people should buy fast at any price. They will always tell you that the market is going to go up and you can make a lot of money eventually off your house if you need to sell it. And it all seems so sensible because well-respected financial advisors get all optimistic over housing. You can look into the best-selling financial advice books and you'll get quotes like, "You should not wait to buy a home. don't wait, do it now. Or no down payment, borrowing from your retirement plan, ask your mother and father for a loan, buy now. Or you aren't really in the game of building wealth until you are in the real estate game, etc. So you'll hear that kind of advice, and perfectly reasonable people really get caught up in this kind of frenzy, the house flipping and all that kind of thing. We've seen it so much recently, and it is just beginning to be recognized as an ugly, ugly situation for millions and millions of Americans. We all have anecdotal stories and truths about the fact that we knew somebody who in the past paid a very small amount of money for a house that is worth so much more money today. I personally know someone in New York who paid $27,000 for a home in the 70s, and that home is now worth over $500,000 without a whole lot of improvement, just maintenance and repair. So with numbers like that, it does seem like home ownership is the working man's best place to wealth. But the reality is a lot less exciting. On the average, home values usually rise at roughly the same pace as inflation. So the truth of the matter is that putting your money into a home is really just a little better than putting it into a passbook savings account, but classically not as good as putting it into the stock market. So for example, if you had bought a typical $100,000 home back in 1977, today you would own a home worth about $308,000. That seems pretty good, but if you had put the same money in the stock market back in 1977 and had invested prudently in an indexed account, today you would have just over $1 million, and you wouldn't have had to pay for roof repairs or new furnaces or redoing the driveway. And as we know today, while there have been some phenomenal run-ups in home prices, we're seeing phenomenal crashes. And the one today is quite big, but historically it has happened between 1989 and 1993, for example. The value of a typical home, when adjusted for inflation, dropped by 7%. And that's not even considering the nightmares of perhaps your job gets changed and now you move somewhere else and get another house, and you're trying to maintain a new house while selling another house that is in a receding market, and so you are in serious financial trouble for months and months, and sometimes it's even years, trying to dump the second house and covering two mortgage payments every month. No one can sell you a house with guarantee that prices will always rise and markets will always stay hot. Anyone who claims that is not giving you the truth. The best financial reason for owning a home is not so you can resell it for a bunch of money. At best, making big money is a long shot. Certainly nothing you should gamble a third or more of your monthly paycheck on over the next 30 years. So what are the best reasons for home ownership? Well, one day you will get your house paid off and you can live rent-free for the rest of your life. Owning your own home is a great safeguard against inflation. Rents keep rising, but a fixed mortgage is just that. It's fixed. And then over the long run, the money you would have spent on rent goes toward building something valuable in your life. If you're trying to double your money, don't do it by buying homes. Home ownership has some ups and some downs, but over time it is more like passbook savings, as I said, a respectable return on your investment, but not an exciting bet for most people. If you need to wait a few years while you save for a down payment and pay off your debt, don't worry. You'll have plenty of time to get on the wealth building train. But what is most important, you'll do it from the strongest possible place. And next week, we'll continue with some more buts in the home ownership scenario. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.